But we begin today our effort between now and the November 4th election to bring opportunities for you to hear from the candidates of all parties who are on the ballots for federal, state, legislative, county, local offices, and school board. So we're going to have a whole group of candidates on between now and then. Your opportunity to hear directly from the candidates. It's not about me asking the questions. It's about you asking the questions on issues important to them on the offices that these men and women are running for. They're the ones that went downtown, filled out a form, or got petitions, put their name on the ballot, put themselves out here. And the least we could do is provide an opportunity for those candidates to talk directly to our community. We have two candidates from the Libertarian Party. They are running for the United States Congress. The United States Congress is a federal office. House of Representatives. They have primary responsibility for starting the federal budget. Anything that is federal law, anything from drug stuff, Social Security, defense, the VA, veterans, anything the federal government is responsible for, the Congress of the United States has some say over that, including the House of Representatives. The 7th Congressional District is most of Marion County. All of Center, Warren, Wayne, Perry, Franklin, and Decatur, plus a good portion of Pike, Lawrence, and Washington townships. The 5th Congressional District is the rest of Marion County that I didn't mention, along with Hamilton County, the good side of Boone County and Zionsville, plus Madison County all the way up to Tipton, almost to Kokomo. It's got some of the richest places in Indiana and some of the poorest places in Indiana. Both of these congressional districts. Chris Mayo is the Libertarian candidate for the 7th Congressional District. John Crum is the Libertarian candidate for the 5th Congressional District. And they're here live in our studios. Let me begin with Chris Mayo. Chris, first of all, welcome.
Thank you.
Thank you for kicking this off. So why are you running?
Well, I think... You know, I think like a lot of people, I see it looks like a broken system, you know, where we got two parties. I'm not seeing a great difference between the two of them, ultimately. And, you know, I think people need to know there's more than two options out there. There's another option out there, whether it's, you know, the third party's libertarian, whether it's, you know, a fourth or fifth party. I think, you know, people need to be aware and see it on the ballot and see us out there and hear us out.
What kind of background and experience do you bring to this race? You know, the members of Congress are from all walks of life in this country. Who's Chris Mayo?
Well, Chris Mayo is, I like a lot of people. I'm a husband, a father. You know, I work, I pay my taxes. I see, you know, and I think, you know, every decision that the federal government makes has an impact on everything, you know, everything I do in my life, where what I spend, what money I take home, and everything else. And I think that should, you know, be an automatic qualifier for anybody. I am a veteran. I was in the Air Force during the height of the Afghanistan and Iraq wars, and got a chance to travel the world, been to 40 different countries, and just, you know, a lot of experience there overseas. Really being a dad and serving during two wars really opens your eyes. It puts a different perspective on things.
John Crum is the Libertarian candidate in the 5th Congressional District. John, welcome. Why are you running?
Thank you. Well, I'm running because we're spending money we don't have and mortgaging the future of our children and grandchildren, which is not only wrong, it's immoral. Because when it comes time to pay the piper, their standard of living is just going to plummet. And also because the federal government is spying on innocent Americans, and in contrast to our Fourth Amendment rights, we've got to stop these things. And those are the two main reasons why I'm running.
239-1310, 239-1310 is afternoon's name. It's your opportunity to talk to these candidates, ask them the questions on the issues important to you in the race for Congress. Chris Mayo, you mentioned that you served our country in our Air Force in these most recent conflicts that we've been involved in.
Sure.
This whole situation where I think Senator Donnelly put out a release today, you know, concerned about the suicides of our military men and women who come back from serving, and you know, take their own lives, the whole situation with the mess at the VA, mm-hmm. the lack of employment opportunities for our veterans. It has nothing to do with color. It's right. just veterans are being dogged out. What can you do if elected to Congress to help your fellow veterans, whether they served in Korea or Vietnam or they just got back from Afghanistan?
Well, I think we absolutely have an obligation to take care of, you know, people that volunteer to serve the federal government and mm-hmm. go wherever they said. You know, they signed a contract and they have certain entitlements that come along with that. The VA, I don't even know where to begin with the VA.
Have you had dealings with them?
I have. When I first got out of the Air Force, I originally attempted to use the VA, and it was, I mean, the wait times were, you know, ridiculous. I've had back and knee problems and stuff like that, and I had them when I was serving, but it hasn't hindered me, but I've tried to keep it taken care of, and it's one of those, you get on a waiting list to get on a waiting list, you know, hey, I need to get my knee checked out. Well, we'll call you back in 3 to 4 months, and then when we call you back, we'll get you on another waiting list.
Is the problem a lack of doctors, and that's what is the waiting list? Is it that they just are incompetent, or is it that we need a system where, you know, send the vet to the closest hospital and then have that hospital send Uncle Sam a reasonable bill?
I think there should be an option. There should be options outside of the VA hospital, absolutely. Part of the problem is if we're gonna run the system all on VA hospitals, they need to be able to accommodate. You know, there's been an explosion in the amount of, you know, veterans, troops, people coming back from wars and, you know, having injuries, traumas, whatever, you know, over the last decade. I believe it was in 2003 during the Iraq War was the, I don't remember who it was, serving on the Army staff at the time said, you know, we're gonna have to be able to, account for this. Mm-hmm. It's gonna be a nightmare and, you know, we're seeing it. You know, what happens when you run this type of foreign policy, you're going to have to account for.
Is it something where we didn't anticipate, okay, if we're going to send 150, 200,000 men and women into harm's way, you have to assume that some of them are going to need to be patched up, fixed up, so you got to expand the system on the back end?
I think so. I don't think they took it seriously. Mm-hmm. You know, after 9/11 and going into the Iraq War, we were sold that they were short-term missions, and it wouldn't require that many troops. So, if they believed what they were saying, then maybe they believed we wouldn't have this influx of combat veterans. But, it is something. You know, the problem exists. We can't, you know, you can't ignore it. It won't go away. And they're going to have to allow these options outside of the VA hospital. They're going to have to expand the VA's capabilities to take care of them.
John Crum, on this situation with our veterans, where do you stand?
Well, that was one area that I was really unfamiliar with at first. Mm-hmm. So when I've been out to the parades and fairs and knocking door to door, I've talked to a lot of veterans and got a lot of responses of, boy, the system's really messed up. Mm-hmm. So I finagled myself into a meeting of it's called the Veterans Advisory Council at the Marion VA Hospital up there. Mm-hmm. And I thought that would be a good place for me to find out what's going on. Mm-hmm. Dr. Brown, I've been to a lot of committee meetings with being in Habitat for Humanity, Indiana, and Indiana 211 and so forth. This had to be one of the most disorganized meetings I've ever been to. Mm-hmm. I mean, there wasn't an agenda. There wasn't really a meeting of minds.
This was something the VA was putting on.
Yes. Mm-hmm. This is in the VA hospital. Mm-hmm. And there were four disabled veterans on the committee, mm-hmm. plus about 12 staff members. But nothing was decided. It was really just a gripe session. There mm-hmm. wasn't any follow-up. There wasn't any plan, let's do this or anything. One of the things they talked about is with the new bill that just went through with the $16.5 billion mm-hmm. was that veterans that are within outside of 40 miles of a clinic or a hospital, a VA hospital, or have waited longer than, I believe it was 45 days, maybe it was 60 days, they had the option of going to what you were saying earlier, another hospital, regular hospital, and then the bill being sent to the VA. Well, they were arguing at this time, is it one or the other? Is it 40 miles plus the 60 days, mm-hmm. or is it, you know, just mm-hmm. one? They didn't know. And, you know, you or I, if we were in that meeting, we would have said, hey, somebody's got to find out about this. Let's find out about this and report back to everybody, you know, because here they are telling the veterans that are coming in, and they just didn't have a clue. So, and I've talked to also the a gentleman that's with AMVETS up at Marion, and they're very, very involved, mainly transporting veterans back and forth and that kind of thing between hospital and clinics. And he knows the ins and outs of the Marion Hospital up there. And I asked him, I said, you know, this $16.5 billion that's just getting ready, President Obama's getting ready to sign, is that going to help, or is that just throwing good money after bad? And he kind of shook his head, and he said, you know, it'd probably help a little bit, but most of it's going to be wasted. He said, there's so much cronyism in the VA and nepotism. There's too many Indians and not enough, or too many chiefs and not enough Indians. And you're asking about the staff. He told me that the staff at the Marion VA, the doctors, the medical staff, isn't any larger than what it was before Iraq and Afghanistan. So, you know, just a lot of problems.
We're talking with John Crom, Chris Mayo. They're Libertarian candidates in the 5th Congressional and 7th Congressional District, respectfully. John Crom, you talked about spending that we don't have, and the president is going to address the nation tomorrow night in terms of talking about some options dealing with these real scummy people called ISIS. If we're getting, I mean, we're already spending more money than we planned on spending, bombing to try to deal with ISIS and to try to keep Afghanistan from falling, I guess is the correct way to say it. Does this mean either A, we got to cut something to balance that spending out, or do we have to be honest with the American people and say, okay, if we're going to really deal with these bad guys, that's expensive, and you got to pay for that?
We got to do one or the other, that's for sure. And I
know nobody wants a tax increase.
Definitely not. But there are all kinds of places that we can cut in the federal government. One thing is, you know, we're talking about the veterans here. We have 700 and some bases overseas. That's just amazing. 200 of them are in Germany alone. There are only 5 other countries in the world that have overseas military bases or bases in other countries. You know, we just cannot afford to be the policemen of the world anymore. We just need to cut back. And so I favor closing a lot of those bases and using that money to pay the do what we promised to the veterans, what they deserve and should be rewarded with. And then also cutting back on the federal deficit. You know, there are a lot of areas. For example, education. Dr. Brown, why do we here in Indiana send our tax money to Washington and they take a nice cut for bureaucrats and administrative purposes and then send the rest back and say, looky here, Indiana, here's some money to educate your children as long as you do it this way. I mean, that is ridiculous. We know how to educate our children here in Indiana much better than some bureaucrats in Washington do. So let's keep the money here. I mean, if I were elected to Congress, I would, of course, I would only be one out of 435 votes, but I'd be pounding on the desk all the time saying, you know, this is wrong. Why are we doing this? There's just not the responsibility that there should be. Right now, we're $17 trillion in debt. And, you know, the Democrats always, you know, want to spend more. And at least they're honest about it because the Republicans say they don't want to. But, yeah.
They're spending it.
I mean, exactly. 14 out of the last 18 years, the Republicans have controlled the House of the Representatives where spending bills must originate. And our debt has gone from under $5 trillion to over $17 trillion. That's over $55,000 for every man, woman, and child in America.
239-1310, 239-1310. You can send me an email at praiseindia.com or a text message at 37890, keyword Amos. Chris Mayo, John Crom kind of said a couple of things that he would do if he were elected to Congress. What would be a couple things that you would do differently than what's being done now?
Well, he hit a couple issues I'd like to follow up on, you know, dealing with military spending. That's something I've kind of, you know, hammered home.
Yeah, you were at some of those bases.
Well, yeah, exactly. And it's ridiculous the amount of money we spend overseas. But, I mean, there's been efforts in the House, or in the Senate, to have the Pentagon, the Department of Defense audited, and I fully support that. We definitely need a whole lot more oversight on what they're spending, where it's going, how the money's being appropriated. A small example, you consider how many units are in the military, each right. branch, how many units they have down to the lowest level. And the way their budget operates is, they, just for an example, say they give you $50,000 a year. Well, you got to, if you want more, as much or more than next year, you got to spend the whole $50,000.
Right.
Now we operate, most units I ever were associated with, would operate on much less than that. And then at the end of the fiscal year, hey, we've got this surplus of, we'll say, $25,000. Let's go out and buy flat screens and new office furniture and everything else.
Just spend it.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. And that's the Department of Defense budget. That's how it works. I mean, I don't know how that account, how that stacks up.
$25,000 here, that's a lot of billion dollars.
We're talking about down to each unit, and that doesn't account for, the amount we spend overseas or...
239-1310. 239-1310's Afternoons Famous with Chris Mayo, John Crom, Libertarian Candidates for Congress, 7th and 5th Congressional District, respectfully. Let's start today with Anonymous. Hi there. Anonymous? Anonymous going once? Anonymous going twice? Drew, I love the folks that just call you, say you want to talk, and we put them on hold, and then they put us on hold. See, and that might have been the best question of the whole time.
But they wanted to remain anonymous.
I want to stay on foreign policy. One other thing, and then we'll take a break and move into domestic. Obviously, sure. The president is going to, speak on this whole ISIS. These guys make Al Qaeda look like church mice.
Oh, absolutely.
I'll start. Chris, you've served over there. What do we do? I mean, we're caught between the American people. I think. Favor, hey, send your Air Force, friends and colleagues in there, take care of business. But there's only so much bombing can do, and at some point we got to deal with, do the boots go back?
Well, I think I do believe we have some responsibility for that. I mean, we were in Iraq. We pretty much opened the gates for that. Mm-hmm. We've spent a lot of time between Iraq and Syria funding a lot of these people that are now trying to overthrow governments we've installed or whatever. I think ISIS is a different threat than what we dealt with Al Qaeda, and that they want to take over. They want territory. Mm-hmm. We didn't really see that with Al Qaeda.
Al Qaeda was just
ideology, and we're looking at a threat now that wants territory. But how you go about dealing with it? I think the first thing the president needs to do. I hear Republicans saying he's not showing leadership. He's not telling us what to do. Well, or he's not laying out a plan or whatever. Well, I think the first thing he needs to do is go to Congress. It's not his responsibility to take this decision on by himself, whether you're putting boots on the ground, dropping bombs, killing people. That's not his decision alone to make.
Mm-hmm.
So I do believe he needs to go to Congress. They need to, whether it's a bill to authorize military force or whatever. As far as an exact strategic plan, I don't have it, just like Obama doesn't have it. But absolutely, it's not his decision alone to make.
John Crom.
Yeah, that's really a tough situation. I agree with Chris. We've really kind of brought this on ourselves to some extent with Iraq when we went in there looking for those weapons of mass destruction that didn't exist. Mm-hmm. And then we just left a vacuum. And, it's just obvious that the Sunni and the Shiite were going to be combating each other. And, I really favor a strong defense. But I'm not sure about a strong offense because of the cost involved. And look what it's done for us here in the last 20 years with our involvement in the Middle East. It seems like we keep digging a deeper and deeper hole. So, I would really favor, we need to protect America. Mm-hmm. Our southern border, I mean, we're spending $65 billion in Homeland Security.
Right.
And we don't even have our southern border secured. I mean, terrorists could come through there. And it's ridiculous to be spending all this money on Homeland Security and also on our military and be wide open like that.
239-1310. 239-1310 is Afternoons Famous. This is our first candidate Tuesday for the fall elections. Chris Mayo is the Libertarian candidate in the 7th Congressional District. John Crom is the Libertarian candidate in the 5th Congressional District. Your opportunity to find out where they stand on the issues important to you. When we come back, look at the domestic stuff. Jobs, economy, health care, Social Security, all that and more. It's Afternoons with Amos after these.
Hi, this is Linda L.C. Clemens. And when I want to stay informed, I always listen to Afternoons with Amos on AM 1310, The Light.
239-1310, 239-1310's Afternoons with Amos with Chris Mayo, Libertarian candidate in the 7th Congressional District, John Crom, Libertarian candidate in the 5th Congressional District. Friday we asked, did an unscientific, unofficial poll on the program, and we asked what the most important issues were to people, and it came up jobs, you know, far and away, and then crime, and then education. If you're elected to Congress, what could you do about improving the job situation here in the 5th and the 7th Congressional District? John Crom, we start with you.
Well, you know, people have got the impression that the federal government is in charge of creating jobs, and that is just not the case. The federal government can only force people to do things. That's what George Washington said. He says government is force. It's not pretty. Mm-hmm. And so the federal government should just be protecting us and our property from people who would harm us, and basically allowing the free market system to work. And I know a lot of people back, sitting back and are going, boy, it sure hadn't worked for me. Mm-hmm. Well, they're not in the free market system right now. Today is crony capitalism. Mm-hmm. And that's so big money is really ruling, Washington DC and Congress. If you don't believe me, go to the Federal Election Commission website and look up your congressman, woman, and your senator. And it's amazing how much money is giving through PACs, political action committees, you know, special interest groups, big corporations, and most of them aren't even in the district. Mm-hmm. You know, why are they doing? Well, they're doing that because they want access to members of Congress, and their lobbyists, basically write bills and take them in and say, this is what we want passed. There was a paper done just recently, an economist from Northwestern University and one from Princeton University worked together. Mm-hmm. And basically their conclusion, they were looking at who influences Washington. And lo and behold, you know, it's not you and me. It's the big corporations, the big banks, those with money to give to political campaigns and to hire lobbyists, to hobnob, so forth.
Well, then do we need more regulation of that? I know we want to respect the free market system, the capitalist system here in this country. But it's also like in a football game, there's at least referees to keep the 22 players from flat out concussioning each other. So does there need to be some kind of referee to say, wait a minute, you know, y'all have gone too far. Some of this money needs to be dialed back, or, you know, they're supposed to have programs and rules to encourage jobs to be put in inner cities or into our smaller communities. Yet whenever somebody decides to do a job, hey, let's go out to Zionsville and build something, you know, another new warehouse on I-65. And then the people who live in the 7th Congressional District or in parts of the 5th Congressional District can't get to the jobs because there's no public transportation. There's no way to get there. Where does the role of government come to kind of level that playing field or make the playing field a little bit more fairer?
And that's a good analogy of what you're saying about the football stadium. Let's talk about the EPA, for example. When I was growing up, especially up in the region, you go up there, and there was just smog all over the place. You go up there today, and there's not. And that's because of EPA regulations. That's making the playing field more even. Mm-hmm. But today, the EPA is trying to regulate carbon dioxide. Mm-hmm. I mean, carbon dioxide is not a toxic, but what they're saying, you know, it's global warming. It's one of the gases that holds the heat. Well, yes, it does, but it's such a small percent, but it's really about power grabbing. And so there is a fine line between what needs to be regulated and what doesn't need to be regulated. But what I was talking about before, the crony capitalism, there are so many big corporations, organizations, that are involved in all these fights. You know, we have crisis after crisis. The Republicans take one side, the Democrats take the other side. Republicans get all this big money, Democrats get all this big money, and nothing gets solved, and we go on to the next crisis.
All right, 239-1310. 239-1310 is afternoon's name is. Oh, when you're calling it as Candidate Tuesday, Drew is not the candidate. You know, I got folks calling trying to ask Drew is not the candidate. I'm going to put a limit to y'all. I'm going to put a 30-second limit on conversation with Drew. If you can't to tell Drew what you're going to call about in 30 seconds, he's going to hang up on you and nobody get. Let me go to Kim at 239-1310. Hi, Kim. Kim? Huh. Drew. Hold on. Yeah, Kim. Let me go to Kim. I know. Hi, Kim.
All right, can you hear me?
I can hear you fine. Yeah. The problem was the person Drew was talking about, was talking to, didn't want to hang up, and he had to hang up on him, thinking Drew was the candidate. Go ahead, Kim. You're here with Chris Mayo and John Crom.
Okay, so who was the gentleman that was talking about the ISIS issue and looking for the weapons of mass destruction?
I think that was John Crom, the Libertarian in the 5th Congressional District.
And he is running for what position?
He is running for the United States Congress, congressman.
As a senator?
No, as a congressman.
Congressman. Okay. Well, Mr. Oh, I'm sorry, I didn't catch the name again.
Crom. Mm-hmm.
Crom, that was talking about the ISIS thing. My question to you is, why would you refer to President Obama as Obama and not, address him by his proper name?
Oh, see, now I got confused. I think that was Chris Mayo that
okay,
was referring
Chris
to.
Okay, Chris Mayo then. Why would you call him Obama and not President Obama?
Yeah, that was me, and it's, you know, I thought about that, but to be honest, I do it with everybody. It's not just the president, whether it's, you know, John Boehner, I refer to him as Boehner. I refer to
and
John Crom over here as
would you want to be referred to as Congressman, whatever your last name is?
You know, honestly, I have no problem with not having a title. I'm not really into assigning nobility to anybody. I've been called Mayo for most of my life. So,
okay, so,
even
so
in
they
the
could just think they could just address you, use your name, and not make any connection to Congress. I mean, no one would know who you are.
Well,
right.
That's fine. I don't hold a title anyways. And, you know, like I said, whether it's, you know, I've called our, minority leader, Pelosi. I've called our, House Speaker of the House, Boehner. I refer to one of my opponents
Obama
as Carson.
President Obama is President Obama.
That's correct.
Okay. Thank you, Amos.
All right. You're welcome, Kim. Let's go to Pierre at 239-1310. Hi there.
Oh, good afternoon, Amos.
Good afternoon.
And, good afternoon to the, candidates.
Good afternoon.
The one thing I want to say is they always come on talking about Washington is bad and the government needs to stay out of the way. Well, if the government would have stayed out of the way in 2008 and 2009 and let market forces go along as they should, we'd probably be in the second Great Depression right now. Remember, credit markets froze up, and we needed the government to step in and put money in the system in order for things to work and keep going. And you know, it always blows me away. They talk about big government. Nobody's talking about big government, especially not Mr. Pence. When an F5 tornado rolls through a community, they're not talking about small government then. They want all the federal assistance that they can gather. But the thing that you two gentlemen need to be concerned about, as all candidates running for the 7th Congressional District, and I was a candidate earlier this year, is that we've got a clerk in Beth White who, if you go on the Marion County website for election result totals, you cannot see the 2006 election result totals, and she refuses to post those numbers. 2004. That is a serious crime. If she wants to be Secretary of State, guys, you got to join with all the other candidates and ask for accountability from the Justice Department. And the president's doing a good job, but the president needs to lead. And he needs, and Amos, they just might have to put boots on the ground for a minute. But I just want you guys to take that into consideration when you come on slamming the federal government, telling the people the federal government ain't doing any good. But in crisis, that's when people look to the federal government. Thank you for taking my call.
All right, appreciate it. 239-1310. 239-1310. This afternoon's Amos. Got a couple of text messages at 37890. Keyword Amos. Raising the minimum wage, John Crom, Chris Mayo, that is something the federal government and Congress can do. Where do you stand on raising the minimum wage?
Yeah, that's also a tough issue because there's a lot of people out there hurting, getting, you know, $7-$8 an hour, and you just can't live on that. However, if we start putting these arbitrary numbers in the free market system, and don't allow the free market to work, that makes it just that much tougher. Mm-hmm. So it really is a hard area. We need really to get back to basics where people are free to do what they want, live the way they want, and people could start all kinds of businesses if the government just cuts back on all the regulation. I understand what this gentleman was saying about the government having to step in on the big banks. But, you know, a lot of that was caused by the government in the first place because way back in President Clinton's era and then also George W. Bush and then with President Obama, they were trying to have everybody own a home. And, you know, I was executive director of Habitat for Humanity in Hamilton County and then executive director of Habitat for Humanity of Indiana. And so I'm all for home ownership. But you can't do it if people can't afford really to live there and keep up the upkeep. And so they were giving all these loans out that people couldn't afford. And all of a sudden, the banks are stuck with all these bad mortgages. And that was what caused the crisis in the first place.
Let me, Chris Mayo, your reaction on the question on minimum wage.
Well, I would like to, if I could for a second, piggyback off John there. I absolutely agree. It's hard to say, you know, we needed the government to step in when it was their problem to begin with. You know, we had a market that was heavily propped up by, you know, manipulating interest rates and everything else through the 90s and then the 2000s. You had a bubble that was declining after 9/11, the dot-com era, and they spent, I mean, forever trying to and pump that back up, and what we saw was the collapse of it. And as far as saying if we didn't step in, we had another Great Depression, I think we need to look at history and see how much intervention there was after the Great Depression, whether it was Hoover or Roosevelt, that lasted a decade, and they did everything they could with government meddling to try and get out of it.
And it really took the onset of World War II and the rearming of America. Let me go to Andrew at 239-1310. Hi there.
How you doing?
Fine.
Hi.
I have a question. I actually have a question.
Okay.
What is raising the minimum wage going to do with employers figuring out that Obamacare is going to have to, you know, they have to pay health care through Obamacare to if they got more employees than they supposed to have, and they figuring out a way by cutting hours and stuff like that. So as the federal government, are they ever able to do something about this? You know what I mean? Like, is it something? You know, are these guys that you know we voting in the office, are they fighting this? Because it's hurting us.
Are you fighting the companies that are reducing hours so they can get employees below the 30 hours a week so they don't have to pay for the Affordable Care Act?
Right. That in accordance with the Obamacare, because it is the Obamacare that's making employees do that, right?
Well,
that's my understanding. I'm experiencing it right now.
You are working more than 30 hours and you got your hours cut back?
Yeah, I'm working more than 30 hours, and then once they figured out, you know, hey, they would have to pay all these. They started cutting everybody's hours.
Mm-hmm. In terms of Chris Mayo, John Crom, in terms of the Affordable Care Act and businesses reducing hours so the businesses wouldn't be liable for any penalties under the Affordable Care Act, you know, is that something that if you're elected, it needs to be dealt with?
I think it does. But how we go about it's important here. I think if they go through and start trying to mandate that businesses can and can't do this because of a problem that they created, you know, you're just going to perpetuate the problem. What we have to look at here, whether or not the Affordable Care Act was benevolent or not, we have to keep in mind that that's what created it. It's not what the businesses decided to do. It was what the law created. They have an incentive, obviously, to do what they can to, you know, stay in business, make profits, grow, whatever the case may be. And then regarding his question about what would the, you know, what does it matter as far as the raising the minimum wage to offset it, that's a great question, you know, when people are getting their hours cut back or whatever, even if you did bump it up $3-4 an hour, if you're getting cut below 30 hours, you know, a small increase in the minimum wage isn't going to account for much, and more than likely it's going to create further reductions in the, you know, man hours or employment in general.
John?
Yeah, it's a really a tough area once again. And as Chris said, you know, the Affordable Care Act really created this situation, and businesses are just operating as businesses do, trying to maximize profit for the business owners. But it's, if you look at the laws Congress passed, if you go in and look at almost all of them are correcting past laws or modifying past laws. And it seems like the more laws we pass, the more laws there are. You know,
it's kind of like our foreign policy. The more we do, the worse the problem gets.
let me go to Mary at 239-1310. Hi, Mary.
Good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
Hi.
I'm doing pretty good. Hello, are you there?
We're all here. What's up?
Okay. I would like to make a comment about addressing, quote, Mr. President, unquote, Obama, other president, and high profiles. For years, they have called president by their last name. There was Eisenhower, Ike, and Mamie Eisenhower. That was Nixon was called Nixon.
That's right, he was.
Kennedy was called Kennedy. And Jack and Jackie. They have two Bush presidents that it got to the place they had to put a first name or an initial onto it. Albeit it was not always Mr. President, or President. There was Jimmy Carter. They called him Jimmy Carter. Some folk called him even the Peanut Man. That was Reagan. He was not called President all the time. Called Reagan.
Or Ronnie.
And that was Clinton. That was called Clinton. And Bill.
Well, I tell you what, Mary, you went all the way back to Eisenhower.
we gotta throw the Adams in there too.
And you're teaching great history.
Yes.
And also there are high profile people that are called by their last name. Jesse Jackson is one. Al Sharpton is another. And even Martin Luther King, MLK, and the Muslim, Malcolm X, all that they had. And those other high-profile singers and actors called by their last name and just called by their first and last name. They were also called household terms. Anyway, what I'm getting at, there's no use for all the brouhaha and hallabaloo unnecessary because the first black president is not called, quote, Mr. President, unquote, Obama all the time.
All right, Mary, you have taught some American history here. We appreciate that. Thank you. 239-1310. 239-1310 is Afternoon's Name. It's Canada Tuesday. We'll be back with our remaining moments with John Crom, Libertarian candidate in the 5th Congressional District, and Chris Mayo, Libertarian candidate in the 7th Congressional District. More of your calls. Text messages to 37890 keyword Amos or emails at praiseindy.com after these.
This is Mark Crouch, station manager WCLJ-TV, Trinity Broadcasting Network, and you are listening to Afternoons with Amos on AM 1310 The Light, Indy's source for inspiration and praise.
We go to the phones and Derek right quick at 239-1310. Hi there. Derek?
Hey, I have a question about the minimum wage situation. Don't we think that at some point that the people that are wanting more wages are going to probably be pushed out? Because if I was a business owner, if I had to pay more, I'm going to demand more education and better qualified candidates than the ones that are, most of the people doing minimum wage jobs probably are those who kind of underachieved in high school, and those are the jobs that they qualify for. Asking for more wages, I'm going to ask for better qualified candidates, so they may get pushed completely out of the picture. Is there a concern for that? And should each company be paying wages based on what their annual earnings are? A Fortune 500 company should have to pay the same as a company that has 300 employees as a minimum wage.
All right, let me start with John Crom, because we were talking during the break about the war on poverty in broader terms.
Yeah, what you were saying there about the minimum wage on requiring more qualified workers, you know, that would probably be appropriate in some instances, but in a lot of instances, you know, we're talking about flipping burgers or something like that, and I don't think it really happens there. But what they would require, I think, if we increase the minimum wage is, say there were 10 workers and they would probably cut down to 8 or 9 workers and demand more work out of the remaining eight or nine would be my guess.
Mm-hmm.
One thing we were talking about in the break here was the war on poverty, and we have, ever since President Johnson declared war on poverty, we've spent a total of $17 trillion. That's a year and a half earnings for every man, woman, and child in America in the war on poverty, and we're not even any better along. I don't know if anybody saw this, Paul Ryan, the Republican from Wisconsin, who's kind of the budget guy for the Republicans, wrote a letter to the editor, and of course it went in all the major papers, and he says, we need to expand opportunities in this country. Each year the federal government spends almost $800 billion in 92 programs to help struggling families, yet the poverty rate is the highest in a generation. He goes on talking about there are 92 programs to fight poverty, and his solution was to consolidate 11 of those programs into one and give the states more say-so in how those funds were expended. But, you know, this is just what I was talking about before with the big moneyed interests controlling so many things, because, you know, common sense, if you look at this $800 billion that we're spending and you go to the Census Bureau and you find out there's 48.5 million people living in poverty in America. If you divide the $800 billion by the 48.5 million people, we are spending $17,000 per individual that's in poverty. Now, how many people who are getting welfare are getting $17,000? You know, where is that money going?
All right, good point.
Can I ask you this question?
Very quickly.
Quickly, don't you think the more money that we put in local government hands, the more that it creates an incentive for corrupt governments locally? Usually the more corruptive governments are usually the small local ones, especially, you know, places like Detroit and Chicago and Cleveland, where people are always getting locked up because they're mishandling funds because the federal is not watching over it.
You're talking about the fox protecting the chicken coop there, I think, because we have corruption both places. The thing about local government, though, is you have a lot more control about what goes on locally if you're involved. If you go to the school board meetings, if you go to the city council meetings, if you go to different things, you can have input. And if people get grassroots, get people involved, and say, hey, we want this, locally they're going to listen.
Right,
but on a national level, that's very difficult to do.
All right, Derek, let me go to Kim at 239-1310. Hi there.
Hi, Amos. I'm back. I was just listening to the comment
Kim! I hate to do this, but when we have Canada Tuesday, it is one to a customer. Nobody gets a second chance. That is not fair to everybody else that has been patiently waiting. Let me go to Anonymous at 239-1310. Hi there.
Hi, Amos.
Hi.
Again. I challenge everybody to look at the candidates and not just really jump in like they usually do just because they're color, race, creed, or however. I just challenge them to look specifically at how they did everything and how they, went along as far as last year or year before that. And then my second comment is, I don't see where the money is in government either when they created all them 92 things that they were supposed to do. Now, what are they going to do as far as that when they come up to be elected?
Yeah, what y'all going to do about what she talked about, Chris Mayo?
Well, her first point there about getting people to vote outside of skin color or party, obviously for a third-party candidate, that's huge. And I think that's a big issue is people do vote, party lines, or they just vote. A lot of times vote is against the other guy, whether for a particular person or for a particular philosophy or principle. And then as far as the second part goes, I'm going to be honest, I was moving my headset and I didn't hear the question.
I'm challenging everybody to look into the background of how people, because you say what you're going to do, and my thing is say what you mean and mean what you say.
Sure.
When
Amen.
You get into the office, it's just a lot of hoopla when you get in there. But once you get in there, and I know you have everybody pulling down on you, and you only can go so far because they only let you go so far anyway. But then when you went in there and the stuff that you said you was going to do when you get in there, I know your hands are kind of tied, but they're not tied to the point that you can't come and, talk to the people or, be to the people's needs of whatever thing.
All right, you made good points. Let me go to Rod right quick at 239-1310. Hi there.
Hey, hey, Mrs. Rob Wayne.
Yes, fine.
To your guest, I have a couple questions. One, I disagree with you on your point that the Community Reinvestment Act caused the meltdown of the property bubble that happened this recent. If you recall, the CRA was created for the very purpose because the banks were redlined and weren't providing credit to communities. And having represented a number of community groups during that time period, I can attest to that. But my second question to you, you both are arguing against the minimum wage. Given that the marketplace continues to raise in terms of cost of living, yesterday milk went to $3.85 a gallon, and wages have not kept it with inflation, what do you propose if you don't want to do raise the minimum wages so people can at least live? What do you propose as an alternative? And I haven't heard you speak about that.
Well,
but the market has not done that.
Well, on your first part, you did address the Community Reinvestment Act. What I was actually finding fault with was not just that piece of legislation so much as what the actual Federal Reserve and what are the government-sponsored enterprises that control the lending industry do. When I was talking about the bubble that's created, I wasn't talking about specifically about that bill, but rather the fact that interest rates were heavily manipulated to encourage home ownership, trying to hold them down, interest rates down, hold prices down, and encourage that. And, but banks could only hang on to so many mortgages. There's only room for so many mortgages to go around, in an artificial economy like that. It wasn't a natural, progression. And I think that's why we saw the meltdown there. On the minimum wage. That's a separate issue. But on the minimum wage issue, you talked about the price of milk, and a lot of people forget about the fact that, products like milk and oil and stuff like that are heavily regulated by the government, whatever they do, whether it's price floors, price ceilings, interest rates and stuff like that. You mentioned inflation, and that's huge. And I think that's to me, I don't deny the poverty issues, and I completely understand where the minimum wage argument's coming from, but I think a lot of that can be addressed by addressing our inflation issues. I look at
I haven't heard you speak in terms of how, if you're going to be a candidate and you get elected, how you choose to do that. I mean, you keep saying that, for example, milk, that's not heavily regulated. We know what the we know that a large part of it is because of import. People, the market decided it wanted to import milk and cheese out of the country, which caused them a rise here. But that is an issue. If people can't live to buy their own products, then you keep saying you want the marketplace to thrive, but people can't pay for it. So I'm not hearing you saying how you plan to address that when the marketplace recognizing that it's continued export out of the country or continue rising beyond people being able to purchase it will have an impact on the marketplace. So the marketplace is not correcting itself by saying let us change prices, let's reduce prices. Rent has not reduced. The IPL gas company has not reduced their prices. They recognize people can't pay for it, so they won't pay for it. So my point is that the marketplace is to rectify itself. As we always say, back to sliding hand, that the marketplace will correct itself. It hasn't done it, and I haven't heard either candidate address as libertarian how you plan to do that without saying that it's the cause of regulatory agencies or government.
Well, I guess what we're both getting at here, and ultimately what we would both work to do is get the government out of the way. Again, with the inflation issues, they're the ones that control that. The Federal Reserve is, the Constitution never permitted the Federal Reserve to exist in the first place. So we've created this entity where, basically a bunch of bankers get to control these prices that you're talking about. They have heavy influence on it. They control how much currency's in circulation, inflation, and everything. And, ultimately, that was supposed to be up to Congress to regulate, and that's an issue where I would want to go in and have the Federal Reserve audited to find out what it has done. It operates in a huge cloud of secrecy, and then ultimately we may need to abolish it. That's a start. And then, as far as imports and exports go, that's, again, heavily regulated by the government, whether you're talking about tariffs. Subsidies are a huge thing. That's a huge factor on the price of, like, milk, for example.
Let me go to Anonymous. He'll be our last caller with John Crom, Libertarian candidate in the 5th Congressional District, and Chris Mayo, Libertarian candidate in the 7th Congressional District. Hi there.
I have a question.
Yeah.
I had to comment. It's people that run on dialysis and their families sometimes have to work and they don't have no way to get there because the cab only takes you so many miles. And I was wondering, is there any way people can donate some vans and maybe even drivers to take people to their dialysis appointments? Because, it's needed. It's needed.
Well, this isn't an issue that the federal government can deal with.
Okay, so it has to be Congress?
This is Congress.
it has to be,
Are these patients people that are on either on Medicaid or Medicare?
Both, both, sir.
If they're on
the yellow cab only takes them so far to get to their doctor's appointments and to dialysis, but some of them have to be there like 5 o'clock in the morning to run on dialysis. Mm-hmm.
And yellow cab won't take them at 5 o'clock in the morning and bill Medicare or Medicaid?
They say that they only allowed to take you 6 miles, and that was it.
Wait. Who wrote the 6 miles? Is that a federal regulation, or is that just yellow cab?
I guess I don't know, sir. I don't know. I just know what they told me.
So yellow cab can only take you 6 miles?
6 miles. That's what they said when you have a doctor's appointment.
I think that's something that somebody ought to call to Congressman Carson's office or her Congresswoman Brooks's office and ask them, is that in the regulations?
Okay, thank you.
All right, because it seems to me if the dialysis is 10 miles away and you live 6 miles away and uncle's going to pay for it, what's another 4 miles in the cab?
Yeah, exactly.
Or do a flat rate.
Sure.
A couple of other real quick questions before we ask you our final question. The sale of surplus military equipment to police departments, that issue came up in the whole situation in Ferguson, Missouri. Mm-hmm. Does the police department really need a personnel carrier, or if they have $1 billion buying an F-16?
Well, it's not really a sale. They're giving it to them. Mm-hmm. So that's why it's so attractive to so many police departments. And I can understand police departments wanting to be safe for their policemen and everything. But what it's really doing is militarizing our police instead of serving and protecting it. The sheriff up in, I think it was Lake County, mm-hmm. and forgive me if I'm wrong, but he says it's a war zone out there. Mm-hmm. Well, with that attitude, we're going to see more things like Ferguson where it's just tear gas and tanks and big armored vehicles. So, no, I think they ought to have access to it, maybe a central area or something like mm-hmm. that where it could be shipped in. But, you know, SWAT teams
yeah.
used to be used very, very infrequently. Now they're using them to issue warrants, you know.
Every day.
Yeah, no knocking, banging. It's ridiculous.
Well, they were talking about having them even patrol the streets here, actually yeah. using the SWAT team.
The TV show SWAT back in the day didn't go and do, you know, traffic patrol. Our standard closing question with all of our candidates as we go through this fall is if people want more information about your campaign, how do they get a hold of you? Let me start with John Crum. You're the Libertarian candidate in the 5th Congressional District. How do people get a hold of you?
I've got a website, which is www.crumforcongress.com. It's K-R-O-M. For Congress.com.
And that's F-O-R.
F-O-R, correct. Okay. Yes, mm-hmm. I'm glad you said that.
All right.
You know. And, you know, you can leave comments there. I also have a video talking about the influence of big money in our government. So please stop, take a few minutes and go to my website.
And Chris Mayo, if people want more information about your campaign, he's the Libertarian candidate in the 7th Congressional District. How do they get a hold of you?
I do not have a website. I'm most active on Facebook. I do have a Facebook page, and it is facebook.com/Chris Mayo for Congress.
Okay. That's C-R-I-S-M-A-Y-O for Congress.
Yeah, C-H-R-I-S. That's correct.
He had the check. Chris Mayo is the Libertarian candidate in the 7th Congressional District. John Crum is the Libertarian candidate in the 5th Congressional District. Gentlemen, thanks very much for being with us. Glad to have you.
Thank you.